Comes True presents Dream Gates, Tape 5, Making Death Your Ally, with Robert Moss.
I once had the opportunity to teach a course on philosophy to a group of nurses at a busy big city hospital, and to give myself some idea of what they needed to learn about from me, I asked them to imagine that during the night they could somehow have the undivided attention of a great spiritual teacher, a master from whom they could expect absolute honesty, absolute truth, a deep response to whatever question they brought. I asked them to reach down into the beating heart of their lives and frame the question they would put to a great spiritual teacher if they could have the undivided attention of this being, whether they conceived it as Buddha or Christ or the goddess or the wise woman or whatever. I went home that night with the questions they had written down on scraps of paper, and I opened the envelope with trembling hands. I was very excited to see what the nurses wanted to ask. Women who have to deal so often with dying, with the difficult, messy end of life. I found that more than half of them wanted to ask a question along the lines of the following question: what happens after physical death? And how do I know for sure? What will be expected of me after I die? The big question for most of them was not only about what might follow physical death, but how you can know firsthand. The course became quite an interesting one. We looked at visionary accounts of journeys to heavens and hells. We looked at stories from shamans, like Black Elk, the great Dakota shaman, involving visionary travel to worlds beyond the physical plane. Because as the nurses perceived, death is rather an important subject. It's actually too important to each one of us for us to accept second-hand and possibly unreliable information about it. We need a way of confirming for ourselves what the nature of death and the afterlife might be. That is not to say that we necessarily have a way of knowing everything that's going to happen when we die. As a matter of fact, the great journey that follows death might be rather tedious if that were possible. But we need a means, as the nurses perceived, of knowing for ourselves, as personal truth, what death means to each of us. Your death might mean something completely different to you from what my death means to me. But death, if we can find the courage and the explorer's zeal to confront it, can be a great teacher, as is the understanding of many world scriptures. Think of the Katha Upanishad, in which Yama, the lord of death, becomes the great teacher of Nachiketas when he descends to the realms of the dead and instructs him the means of moving beyond the physical planes and the lower astral realms. So how can we know about these things? Basically, in one of two ways, I think. By receiving communication from travelers who have been to the beyond and come back, especially from departed friends and relatives and teachers on the other side who appear to us in dreams, in meditation, and in visionary encounters. Or secondly, by learning to go there ourselves. There's been a tremendous upsurge of interest in reports of near-death experiences amongst contemporary Westerners, often the result of a physical trauma, of a life-threatening illness, of an accident, of something of that kind, in which those who have been through these experiences have returned with reports of life after life, encounters, however blurry and brief, with departed loved ones or spiritual guides, accounts of the thrilling experience of journeying into the light, and have come very often to live more passionate, more creative, more generous lives, guided and informed by the personal discovery that there is life beyond life. But actually, in the spiritual practice of many world traditions, and of shamanic lineages, the journey beyond the gates of death does not have to be the result of physical crisis, illness, trauma, or accident. It is often a voluntary and intentional journey made by the initiate, the one who is initiated precisely by traveling beyond the gates of death, in order to discover the conditions of the afterlife and bring that knowledge back for the benefit of her own life and that of others. This is a journey that some of us make quite spontaneously in dreams, particularly in big dreams. It is a journey that you, at a time when it might be appropriate in your life, can learn to make for yourself. Perhaps that appropriate time might come when you are thinking about preparing for your own passage into the afterlife. And it's never too late or too early to prepare for that, as we learn from masters like the Tibetan Sogyal Rinpoche in his wonderful book, The Tibetan Art of Living and Dying. As a matter of fact, by learning to confront death and its conditions, you're not entering some morbid state of preoccupation, I think. You can derive from this encounter courage and passion for your life journey. You can learn about these things in order to live more deeply, not to go about burdened by some preoccupation with death. As a matter of fact, we are burdened so long as we treat death as a taboo subject, as Western culture has so long done, something to be ignored, denied, repressed, and move through life as if we're shooting down a superhighway, piling up all sorts of material goodies, knowing only that at the end of this superhighway is a big black hole, and hoping that there's nothing fearsome beyond it. It's a very short-sighted attitude. It limits our humanity, limits our compassion for other people. It limits our ability to play, because when you have a personal experience of life beyond life, you're more likely to regard the conditions of this life, I think, as your playground rather than your jail, and live with that sense of divine sport and fun. So, as we have mentioned, in the living spiritual traditions, the journey beyond the gates of death is an intentional journey. The initiate-to-be in many traditions is shrouded as if for burial or cremation when he or she enters the apogee, the climax of the initiation mystery, which involves dying and coming back, and bringing back a personal geography of the afterlife. For the initiates of the Orphic mysteries in ancient Greece, the process of going beyond the gates of death and coming back involved visiting transition zones in the afterlife, noticing which paths might be the right ones to take, and remembering these words used as a code, as a personal password by the initiates. I am born of earth and of starry sky. My race is of heaven alone. Let's look at the ways that in your spontaneous night dreams you might already be learning about these things and might have available to you personal dream gates through which you can travel at the right moment for you at a time of your choosing to learn more. Perhaps you have dreamed about departed friends or loved ones. This is quite common. One of the saddest and cruelest things about the rule of reductionist materialism in Western society has been that it has taught us that it is impossible, weird, spooky, or unnatural for us to have communication from the other side with departed relatives and loved ones. It's the most natural thing in the world. It goes on all the time. It can sometimes be problematic, because sometimes the departed are lost and confused, clinging to earthly appetites or agendas, lost to their higher spiritual path, and may for that reason, in fact, need guidance from the living. But when we dream of our departed, they are alive in our dreams. And it is foolish, I think, or a very limited perspective, to dismiss this as simply wishful thinking. We learn from our dreams that our departed loved ones are alive on their own plane of reality. They come back to us in dreams for many reasons. They come sometimes to bring a blessed sense of closure. I was talking recently with a young woman who was thrilled in dreams after her mother's death that she had finally been able to embrace her mother and know the tactile sensation of sharing demonstrations of love with a woman who in her physical life had been very inhibited and uptight, not given to touching or kissing or hugging. In dreams over the months after her mother's death, they had a gradual reunion. All the bad blood, all the issues that had divided them in life fell away until finally, in a thrilling, rapturous moment, the dreamer saw herself hugging, embracing, and finally cradling her own mother as if she were holding a baby. How wonderful that the things we left unresolved while a family member or a former partner was living can still be resolved from beyond the grave. Don't let's reject that possibility of forgiveness and compassion and enduring love and enduring union. So one of the reasons our loved ones come back is to give us closure. And sometimes we need to give them closure, because sometimes with a larger perspective that follows physical death, once someone gets their path clear, they realize that they left things unfinished and they need us to help them finish it. Sometimes our departed loved ones and friends come back with practical, life-supporting, life-affirming information we can use. What is strange about that? They might have a natural wish to help us in our lives, to support the former family. After my father's death in Australia in the late 80s, he came to me many times in dreams over a period of 12 months with sometimes quite specific and practical information, material unknown to me in waking life, that I was able to use to help others in the family in various ways. It was specific information from him that helped me to guide my mother in a very fortunate change of apartment. So some of the information was as specific and as practical as that. You may have had similar dreams. Sometimes our departed friends or relatives come to us to give us instruction in what they are learning about the conditions of the afterlife. After his death, a man who had not lived a particularly spiritual life and actually professed great disinterest in questions of spirituality and dreaming, returned to his wife, now his widow, in a dream, as a radiant younger man, vibrant, clean, healthy, and told her that to his amazement and joy he was now living in a wonderful place where it seemed to be perpetual spring, and he would be waiting for her to guide her across the passage when she was ready to make it. That gave her personal confidence about life after life, and it gave her the personal assurance that she would have a guide available to her under a familiar face when her time came. Our departed loved ones and relatives come for other reasons. Sometimes the dead appear in our dreams because they need our help. It's something that Jung commented on. He had many dreams in which departed people seemed to be seeking information and instruction from him. Edgar Cayce, the famous American psychic, noted the same phenomenon of people who had passed on coming to seek information from the living, sometimes simply to bring themselves up to date. There's a wonderful Renaissance Italian account from Abraham Jagel, a Jew living in Mantua, of how his father came to him when he'd been thrown into jail because of a row with a business partner, wanting to get an update on the situation. Why was his son in this trouble? What had been going on? Had he been wrecking the family business? This encounter led to a visionary journey, one of the great visionary journeys, unfortunately too little known, of this Renaissance Jew to several levels of the upper worlds with his departed father as his guide. But his father came to him in the first instance because he needed an update. Sometimes the departed come to us needing more than an update on what's going on with the family and going on in the world they used to know. Sometimes they come because they're lost and confused and need help to get their way clear. And it's not surprising that a lot of people who are dying in modern Western society are lost and confused for time after death, because Western culture has lost the ars moriendi, the art of dying, the art of preparing people for the great adventure of journeying beyond the physical body at the moment of death. So sometimes the departed show up in our dreams, seeking clarification from us as to what they should do. There are some departed people who actually seem to trust people who have physical bodies more than spiritual guides on the other side who do not. perhaps because it's familiar, perhaps because they simply do not believe in the afterlife, perhaps it's because they never learnt about the reality of the soul and the spirit and its subtle vehicles, so that when they find themselves in an embodied form after physical death, they don't realize they are dead, because they still seem to have bodies, can still experience pleasure and pain, can still move in a world of form very similar to the familiar world, and need to learn to see with new eyes and think with new minds. I had a dream about that that was quite instructive for me in the midst of a course I was teaching on the shamanic approach to death, dying and the afterlife. In my dream, I found myself in a sort of convention hall. The location might have been South Florida. At least most of those there had a sort of South Florida suntan on their faces. There was a great gathering there, and they're mostly very worldly people, not bad people, just very worldly people, who had been very given in their lives, it would seem, to piling up material goods, the toys of life, the one with the most toys wins sort of attitude. Not bad people, but very commercial, this worldly people. And there's a bit of unease in the large group, because they've been gathered there for a reason they don't exactly know. And someone comes up on the podium in front of the conferees and says something that makes it clear to them that they are no longer alive. They no longer have physical bodies. They're dead, and they're astounded and thrown into a panic. And they are trying to figure out how all their this-worldly knowledge, all their commercial success, can help them now. And I was interested to find myself in this dream, which was a spontaneous night dream, not a conscious dream. I was fascinated to find myself moving among these people with whom, in waking life at that point, I might have felt little affinity, little connection. Moving among them, helping them in a gentle way, humorous way, to recognize that they had talents they could use on this side of physical death. They could use their sense of humor, their ability to tell a joke. They could use their ability to cut a deal. They had gifts and talents they could apply here, and in any case, they would be helped through a process of learning and instruction. I found that dream, as I say, educational. Now, where spirituality is alive, one of the key elements in preparing us for the great adventure that follows physical death is dream work. There's a Plains Indian saying that the path of the soul after physical death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams. The difference, evidently, is that in dreams, or after dreams, we return to the physical body, and after death we do not. But apart from that, indeed, I think that Plains Indian perception is absolutely correct and deeply wise. In dreaming, we travel through the realm in which we will live and through which most certainly we will pass. After physical death, these may also be the realms through which we travel and in which we might dwell for a time before we come into physical incarnation in the first place. So isn't it foolish not to look at our possibility of going through the dream gates for the benefit of our own understanding and preparation, and in order to help us to guide and prepare others? Let's look for a moment to that question of guiding and preparing others. I know of no better tool in helping the elderly or those for other reasons close to physical death than dream work, in the sense of preparing them to treat the last stage of life, the physical life, as an opportunity for learning and growth and getting rid of the stupid, morbid Western attitude of so many doctors and hospitals, that death is some kind of a defeat instead of an opportunity for initiation into a higher order of reality. Through dream work with the dying, we can help them to treat this stage of life, this challenge in life, as an opportunity to learn and grow and rise to higher planes of spiritual existence. Let me give you an example of a woman dream worker using a dream to help her elderly mother in the weeks before her death. In her dream, the dreamer sees herself sliding down into a huge swimming pool. The interesting thing for her in her dream is that her mother is with her. In fact, her mother is going down the slide ahead of her into this tremendous pool. It's like something at a theme park or a water slide world type thing. And the anomaly is that in waking life, the mother is terrified of the water, has always been scared of the water, and has never learnt to swim. that in the dream the mother is whooping it up like a happy kid shooting down the slide into this vast swimming pool. The dreamer's going down after her. It's all hunky-dory until suddenly a barrier comes down. And the dreamer hears a voice say to her, "You are not invited. Her mother has disappeared." Well, she tries to get a peek over the barrier, and she is stunned and thrilled by what she sees. There in the pool is her mother, frolicking like a seal, and with her is a handsome, vibrant, powerful young man she recognizes as her father, as he might have looked 40 years before his death. There they are sporting in the pool. She wakes up, she calls me, her voice charged with excitement, with enthusiasm. She asks me what to do. I say to her, "Well, if it's my dream and my mother is elderly and approaching death, I am going to share this dream with her. And when I share the dream with her, I am going to dwell in rich detail on the sensory, tactile quality of the dream, the joy. I'm going to try to convey my sense of excitement at seeing her at home in a different element from what she knew in waking life." And she agrees to do it. She calls her mother, who's living in another town, shares the dream in sensory, sensuous detail, and her mother is delighted. Her mother is joyful. And when her mother hears the dream and repeats it, word for word almost, she feels her mother entering the dream. And what is the dream? It is a pathway. It is a dream gate. It's a gateway. That slide into a different element, into a different dimension. What a wonderful, thrilling entry into a different dimension of reality. So this is soul work. The dreamer, in sharing her dream with the mother, having her mother dwell on the elements, enter the play, enter the sport, is getting ready for casting off from the physical body and entering another dimension in which she will find, with this preparation, I have no doubt, that just as she is at home in the water, an element she cannot swim in waking life, she finds herself at home on leaving the body in an element she didn't know she could be at home at before she died, or at least before she entered the dream. So this is a very exciting example, I believe, of how through dreaming we can find dream gates not only for ourselves but for others, through which we can help them to explore and prepare for the challenges that follow physical death. As you become a more conscious dreamer, you can begin to make personal expeditions through your dream gates to explore the transitions of soul and spirit after physical death, to make up your mind for yourself about what might happen when you die. There are many locales and territories where people go after their physical death, and each of us might go to more than one of these territories for the simple reason that we have more than one vehicle of consciousness. We have a physical body. We have an energy body that sustains it. We have a dream body or subtle body, which is sometimes called the astral body, which can travel independently from the physical body and survives the death of the physical body and the energy field that sustains it. Beyond the dream body, as visionary explorers and shamanic journeyers may discover for themselves, we have other vehicles. We have a vehicle beyond the dream body or astral body that I like to call simply the shining body or the body of light. In a shamanic journey I made many years ago, critical to my own path and understanding of these things, I saw myself move successively beyond the physical body into an energy vehicle hovering just above the physical body, beyond that into a dream body which could shapeshift into the form of a bird or a bird-like entity, which carried me to higher dimensions of reality, but at a certain point, in order to travel further and higher, I had to leave my dream body also behind and become a point of light and move onwards in a body of light. Beyond all these embodied forms, we have, I believe, an immortal spirit that might have many names and whose nature and conditions you will perhaps wish to explore for yourself, which can perhaps take you beyond any conception of human forms or forms recognizable to human consciousness, to the realms of the ineffable, which mystic explorers struggle to describe and then finally stop trying to describe because words slip, slide, fall, cannot convey what this is. So I've listed briefly, and I hope relatively clearly, based on experience, not simply reading the accounts of these things in different sources, although, by the way, there are corresponding accounts of these things in several traditions that I find quite precise. The account of these things in the later Neoplatonist philosophers from a Western tradition is fairly precise, although the use of the words is a bit strange to us today, because they call the starry body the higher shining body or spirit vehicle, and we call the astral body the subtle body, and so on. But to keep this simple, the Neoplatonist philosophers from Proclus onwards have a relatively clear description of these things that might extend to the definition of about five vehicles of consciousness, from the physical body up to something on the celestial planes. In Vedic tradition, we have similar descriptions. Particularly in the Upanishads, we have a description of five sheaths or garments of spirit, or vehicles of spirit. The Greek word is okimata, vehicles of spirit. In the Sanskrit sources, we are often hearing about garments or robes of spirit. The theosophists, drawing on both these traditions and others, also give us a fivefold description of the vehicles of consciousness. And you'll find a corresponding account in the writings of the Kabbalists and in the writings of the medieval Persian philosophers, who describe not only five different vehicles of consciousness, but five different levels of reality, or more than that, on which these different vehicles operate. In other words, the understanding from these traditions and others, which you can check and verify and experiment with for yourself through the dream gates, the understanding, the shared understanding, is this. We go in embodied form beyond the physical plane into subtler levels of reality. We do this in dreaming, in visionary encounters, and after physical death. We enter each of these subtler levels of reality in a vehicle or garment or embodied form appropriate to each. After physical death, at a certain point, we might move beyond both the physical and the energy bodies into the subtle body, which I like to call the dream body, which is absolutely at home in the worlds of dreaming and imagination, which the medieval Persian philosophers called the Alam al-Mital, the imaginal realm, a kingdom between the physical plane and the higher spiritual planes. Many people after death seem to stay for quite a long time in this imaginal or astral realm, which has many divisions, many neighborhoods, some pretty scummy, some really quite fascinating, until they are ready to move beyond the dream body, either perhaps to enter another physical embodiment, or to travel beyond it into higher celestial realms, for which they must move into another vehicle, a body of light, which might be something they have to earn in some way. I learn about these things from my own experiences and from the experiences shared with me in workshops and in private sessions with dreamers who come to me. In some of my workshops, I have recently been leading expeditions, encouraging people to make individual expeditions to locations, transition zones, reception centers in the afterlife to see what specifically the process might be for any one of us after physical death. Recently, for example, I encouraged a circle of some 30 dream explorers to each choose a reception center or transition zone in the afterlife and see what goes on there. They came back with some fascinating examples. One woman of Catholic upbringing found herself, not to her great surprise, in a location on the astral or imaginal plane that reminded her of the square outside St. Peter's in the Vatican. And she was thinking, well, I suppose I was raised Catholic, even if I wandered here and there. It's interesting that I'm drawn back to this in my attempt to see what the afterlife might hold for me and other members of my family. She notices various changes in the locale. Everyone's robed in white. And she finds a guide who appears in unexpected form. Although the scene seems to be the Vatican, the guide looks more like Mahatma Gandhi. And she's getting very interested at this point. She tells the Gandhi figure that she wants to check on a departed relative who she had felt was attached to the earthly plane and attached to her because of his addictions. He was a heavy smoker and heavy drinker, not a bad fellow, but he was terribly, terribly wedded to these physical appetites, and she had reason to feel that he was staying earthbound because of the hold of these very physical appetites, trying to get a last drag, trying to get a last smoke. Sometimes through her, she felt. And she had come to feel that he was now on his way, but she wanted to check. So she now has a guide in her dream expedition, and she's asking about her departed relative. And the guide takes her to see him, and he's sitting on a train. He's sitting on a train with a can of beer in his hand and a smoke. And with the encouragement of her guide, she pulls him out of the train. And a little bit befuddled, he accompanies her, not seeing the guide who's holding her other hand, until he comes to a fountain where he is washed clean. And then the guide steps forward with a box, almost like a laundry box, with a fresh, white, shining robe in it. And she sees her departed loved one reclothed in this robe of light. And at this point she watches him soar upwards as a being of light. She comes back from this thrilled, grateful, reverential, awed. We all were when she shared the story. Listening to this, you would be entitled to any degree of skepticism. It's not your own experience. I was there. I was able to look in on some of this. For me, this was an experience absolutely real on its own order of reality. But the point is not to sit around discussing these things and playing head games with them. Yes, let's entertain the skeptic. Let the skeptic be as lively as possible. But don't let's have the skeptic stand between us and a personal understanding and exploration of these things. If you want to know about those reception centers, those stages of transition of soul and spirit after physical death, you have means to find out for yourself. How do you do that? By traveling through the dream gates when you are ready, when you feel called. I'd like to tell you a little bit more about the first-hand explorations that I've been leading and encouraging into these things. At that same session where the circle of active dreamers were traveling through their personal dream images with a program. The program was to explore and check out various locations in the afterlife where people are processed and helped to reorient themselves to their new conditions after physical death. All of these locations probably, in the particular expeditions I am describing, were locations on the astral or imaginal planes, where people still operate in embodied forms, and things still look to some extent like the things remembered from Earth. In this imaginal realm, there are heavens and hells, there are cities and palaces, constructed, we might suppose, by human thoughts, desires, and imaginations. You can visit these places too, at a time when it is appropriate to do that. What might such a time be? The time will probably be announced to you in your dreams, and by your dream visitations from departed people or teachers from the other side. It's rather important not to go wandering about without necessity in these areas. You are traveling some of these realms every night in your dreams, whatever you are doing with the memory of those expeditions at the moment. So if you're interested in consciously exploring the transitions of soul and spirit after physical death, how might you safely and responsibly set about this? You need to begin by clarifying your intention. You might wish to check on a departed relative or loved one. That is a very valid intention, and that intention itself and focusing on the image, the memory of that departed friend or loved one, will probably carry you, once you've learnt the technique of conscious dreaming, as from the previous sessions, where you wish to go. Another way of approaching this is to make a somewhat different but not unrelated statement of intention, perhaps along the following lines. I would like to visit a place of instruction on the conditions of the soul after death, or I would like to visit a reception centre where people are helped after physical death to learn about the conditions of the afterlife. Something along those lines. You might add the intention, I would like to encounter a guide who can instruct me about all of these things. The preparation for the journey to transition zones and reception centers I have described for my workshops included such an instruction. I would like to visit a reception center in the afterlife where people are helped to adjust to their new circumstances and prepared for the further education and growth that might follow, and I would like to meet a guide in that location. The locations people found themselves, interestingly enough, were often locations they had already visited in their dreams, and in many cases they were using a personal dream image for the visual part of the launch. For example, one woman worked with a dream in which she had visited an airline terminal that seemed to be full of dead people, some of whom were being ushered onto a silver plane, a sort of otherworldly plane, which she was not allowed to board. When she went back through that visual image, she was able to talk to terminal staff, she was able to talk to the woman at the airline check-in about what is going on here, and she discovered a wonderful guide who became available to her in the months and indeed years that followed to give her further instruction on such locations in the afterlife and on her personal ability to help people who might be lost or confused on the other side. Another woman used another dream of a house of crystal with many rooms or mansions within it, a bit like Teresa of Avila's famous interior castle. And she was able to return to her house of crystal. She had such a good time that she ended up designing a house for herself, where she fully intends to hang out for a while when she reaches her own physical death. So there are two elements for this that experientially you would like to explore for yourself, and this is a course for explorers. The first is, remember to state your intention clearly and positively and generously. I would like to explore the conditions of the afterlife. I would like to visit a reception center where people are helped to adjust to the conditions of the afterlife. I would like to encounter a guide who will be a source of teaching and instruction for me on these things. The first element is the intention. The second element is the visual gateway. The best visual gateway for you to use is not something that comes from a meditation manual or a book on creative visualization. It is the image from one of your personal, spontaneous dream experiences. The best image you can use is your personal dream gate. Your personal dream gate, for these purposes, might be an image that has come to you fresh in a spontaneous dream or dreamlike state, involving a location on the other side or the appearance of a departed friend or relative, or you might simply return to one of the locales you were learning to use as dream gates in an earlier session. You might return to your special tree. You might feel yourself drawn either up or down in relation to these things. You might find at your special tree a guide or power animal already waiting to accompany you on these expeditions. You might go back to the house of time, where those faces and images from other times are rising up and falling away. That's a very good place, the house of time, from which to explore the reality or otherwise of reincarnation, the connection to you of other life experiences, the possibility that you are born into a family of souls connected with lives going on in other times that from some point of view might be in process of being played out right now. To approach all of this, of course, we have to face up to our own fear of death. In the course of my life, I've had to face death physically and metaphorically many, many times. There are moments when I feel that death stands always at my left shoulder. There are also moments when I become so caught up in the joy of life, of teaching, of following my own path and my practice, that I really give thanks immensely for the pleasures of this life, at which moment my personal death sometimes comes close and whispers in my ear, "Ah, you mean you're not ready to die now?" challenging me to face concerns about the afterlife all over again. And what are one's concerns about the afterlife? Well, one of them, if we face up to it, I think, is our fear of self-judgment. Mythology and scripture contains many accounts of external judgment, but I think as you become an active dreamer on a spiritual path, you might reach the conclusion that the judgment most intimately to be feared is the judgment of one's larger self upon the screw-ups of one's smaller self. What are your fears about death? Of leaving things unfinished? Of leaving people unprovided for? Of not having lived as creatively and joyously as you might have done? A very good way of encountering your own fear of death and making death your ally instead of the source of terror is to picture yourself as you might be at the moment of death. Picture yourself lying in bed or in any situation where you think you might conceivably encounter your death. Picture yourself at the moment just before the passage of soul and spirit from your physical body. You're lying at the point of death. All your life streams before your eyes. You're going through a life review at the instant before physical death. All of your life is accessible to you. All of it is streaming before your eyes. Ask yourself now as you lie on the edge of this encounter with your death, what is it that you regret having left undone in your life? What do I regret not having done? Ask yourself, what other regrets do I have about this life? Regrets of things I have done, of pain I may have caused others, of things left unfinished. And make it your resolution, when you come back from this moment, to act on those insights, to do what you have left undone, to give yourself license to live as fully and passionately and generously as you would like to have lived when you look back from the moment of your death. And give yourself permission to mend whatever fences you might need to mend, to forgive where you can forgive, to accept forgiveness where you can accept forgiveness. You will have questions and thoughts of your own at this moment. The list of issues you might address at the moment of your death might be very long, or it might be quite short and succinct and simple. You know when you lie on the eve of this encounter, in this state of half-dreaming, what your issues are. It all stops in a moment. Everything in physical life stops in a moment. What else do you need to attend to? It's about leaving with no regrets. It's about living and dying with no regrets. Take the courage you can derive from this moment. You have no more time, nothing else to worry about except putting right what you can in your life. Don't tell yourself, for some petty, trivial, limited reasons, that you cannot take that risk, that you cannot make that act of compassion, that you cannot live from the heart because you have to pay the bills and deal with this. At the moment of your death, you reach a clarity. You reach a courage. You reach a pure flame. Take that power and live it for the rest of your life.